What's up, gamers, and welcome to Lost at Sea Gaming. I am Hulking Yoda, the captain of this ship, the SS Gamer, and you have just stepped into my captain's quarters, my weekly gaming update show where I talk about my favorite gaming news topic of the past week, discuss what games I've been playing, give tips on some of those games, as well as issue a weekly relevant gaming-related decree. This week, it's all about the biggest announcements and the ones that just really stood out to me and got me excited from the Game Awards. So let's talk about it and dive right into the episode in my news catch of the week. Gamers, this past week, it was the latest annual entry in the Game Awards, the annual now December highlight of the year for a lot of us gamers, especially now that we don't get an annual E3, or at least in the sense that we had grown to love that show and look forward to those new highlights and trailers and announcements. Well, it seems like anymore in the last few years, the Game Awards has kind of taken that place among the gaming community as well as within the industry. A lot of developers and publishers choose to release a lot of either unknown announcements or information about their games in development, as well as updates on other new and upcoming games that we are just absolutely desperately waiting to get our hands on a controller for. So this year, obviously, I'm here to talk to you about my opinions of a lot of the announcements that were at the show. I'm not going to go into every single announcement that was made. That would just be way too long. And I do have a lot of other stuff that I wanted to share with you in this week's episode. So what I've done is I've gone through all the announcements that were made at the award show, and I've come up with 13 individual games and titles, as well as two expansions that were shown off and announced at the show that I did want to touch base on with you and just kind of give my general ideas and reasons for excitement around them. But before I do that, I did just want to kind of give my brief thoughts and a general overview of the show, what I thought about it, what I think about the Game Awards in general. So when they first started the Game Awards, I was a little bit skeptical, but as time has gone on, I've grown to really appreciate them and what Jeff Keighley has done for the game industry, I would say, because in a sense, I've kind of looked at these as the Oscars of the video game industry. And it's really exciting every year. Obviously, people in Hollywood, they love the Oscars. They go, they get to celebrate and look back at the year that was and recognize the best in each individual category that is represented. And now we get to do that with video games. And with video games being my favorite medium of entertainment, it's just actually really cool to see all of the developers and publishers and actors and everyone who comes together to create these experiences that I love showing up at this auditorium and just kind of recognizing that. And it's always kind of fun speculating who the winner is going to be in a given category and whatnot. And this year was no different for me. You know, I'm kind of biased in a sense because I'm currently playing through God of War Ragnarok, and with it having the most nominations out of any other title at the show, obviously, I was kind of hoping for a sweep, although I was realistic in the sense that I said, you know what, that Game of the Year spot, I really don't know if it's going to be able to take it from Elden Ring. Now, Elden Ring, again, this is kind of where a little bit of bias comes into play. I have actually not played yet, but I've heard nothing but phenomenal things about it. It's obviously sold really well and is very popular. Doesn't always equate to being worthy or deserving of a Game of the Year award, though. So having played most of the games in that Game of the Year category, I thought that was actually pretty cool, too, because obviously, if you've listened to the show, you know I've played through and completed Horizon Forbidden West. I've started and played through almost half of A Plague Tale Requiem at this point, and then we obviously have God of War Ragnarok. I did not play Xenoblade Chronicles 3, although I would love to get into the series. It's always looked really cool. So unfortunately, if you haven't watched the show, spoiler alert if you didn't want to know yet, but God of War Ragnarok did not win that Game of the Year award, but it lost to a worthy competitor in Elden Ring, from what the best I understand. So I'm not necessarily too mad at Elden Ring, if you will, for taking that honor home. But I thought it was actually just a fun show to watch. It was the first time in years that I actually got a chance to sit there and watch the show from start to finish. It was also really cool this year. My wife actually watched it with me. So it was a lot of fun to see the trailers and the acceptance speeches and different things with her and certain things she got excited over. So just in general, it was a fun experience for me and one that I look forward to hopefully having the opportunity to experience in the same way again next year. Now, when we come to the announcements, the world premieres, that's the big thing that probably most gamers really look forward to about the Game Awards, because that's always the big thing going into it is the speculation of what announcements we're going to see, what surprises, like are they going to be able to keep everything from leaking before the actual event airs? And I would say they actually did, and Jeff Keighley even said at the beginning of the show, they did a really good job of most of their content not leaking before the show. So when it comes to these games, the first one I want to talk about, and I'm kind of going in the order for the most part somewhat that they were announced during the show, but the first game on my list I have here is one called Replaced. Now this is a 2D retro futuristic 2D platformer that's set in an alternative 1980s America, and you get to go through a few different locations like a trailer park and a rundown city and a lab and a lot of different locations, but it's releasing in 2023 for the Xbox Series, the Xbox One, and PC on Game Pass. But what really drew me to it was just the look of it. I mean, it's got that sprite-based kind of looking graphic style to it, but just the design of the world as the character was going through it and the music that was playing during it. It looks like a very interesting story and just definitely something worth checking out, especially with it being on Game Pass. Definitely worth one of those. It's on Game Pass, so I'm going to check it out. So, Replaced. Coming, no specific date given for it, but sometime next year in 2023. Now, the next game I want to talk about is Banishers, Ghosts of New Eden. This was completely out of left field for me, and I had no idea that Don't Nod, the developer is most famous for doing the Life is Strange series, I had no idea they were actually working on an action RPG. And the last one that they did that was not tied to the Life is Strange series was Vampyre. And I loved Vampyre. Came out just a few years ago, and man, it was just, there was a few technical issues that from a design standpoint, maybe some hiccups here or there that Don't Nod hopefully learn from. And it looks like from the absolutely extremely brief gameplay snippet we saw, it looks like they may have learned from their previous experiences doing Vampyre, because just to put it out there, Vampyre was nothing like Life is Strange from a gameplay sense, and this also, Banishers, looks nothing like Life is Strange. So it's a straight-up action RPG, and it takes place in the haunted woods of 1965 America, where you play as a couple, one who's actually alive, the other seems to be dead, looks like it's the wife of this husband, and she is, or just a couple, I don't know if they're married. But it seems like she's a spirit, so obviously that she's passed previously, and they actually work together to take out hostile ghosts that happen to be lingering in the woods, and they do this obviously in order to protect the living. Now, the release date that was given was just 2023, so again, no specific release date or month. It may even slip into 2024, given how little we saw of the gameplay, but essentially it was starting out with the main male protagonist in a cabin, it looked like, communicating with a woman who was making him something to eat, and he's also interacting with the spirit of his wife, unbeknownst to the woman who is making him this dinner, and then it shows a very brief gameplay clip, is what it looks like, at least, of the spirit and the male walking in the woods, and you see these ghost creatures come up in the distance, and then the man runs over and they start to attack, and boom, that's the end of the trailer. But it looked really cool, sounds really unique. Definitely can't wait to see more on this game. Now, next up, we also have Baldur's Gate 3, which is a sequel to the Baldur's Gate series, obviously the mainline series of games. And for me, you know, Baldur's Gate, it's another RPG series if you never heard of it or played them. I have actually only ever played Baldur's Gate Dark Alliance and Dark Alliance 2 back on the PS2. I absolutely loved those games. Now, those were more of a top-down isometric camera style and that kind of a style of action RPG. The baseline Baldur's Gate series that was really predominantly on PC, those games I'd actually never played. I did try out Neverwinter Nights way back in the day on PC. Definitely good stuff, but I could just never get drawn into it. But this Baldur's Gate 3, the trailer they showed off, I mean, again, I in more recent years, I've kind of moved away from enjoying as much that top-down isometric style. But it didn't look like this game really was that. I mean, it looked like there may be certain camera angles here or there, depending on combat or where you were positioned within the gameplay world. But overall, it actually looked like it was full 3D. So I'm not 100% sure, but I'm still very open to seeing what this game is and possibly giving it a shot when it comes out in August of next year. Now, speaking of PC action RPGs that have that kind of top-down isometric perspective, the next game here I wanted to mention was Diablo 4. We got a brand new trailer for it, and it was purely cinematic, though. But it was actually still a really cool trailer, and it shows this army that's, I guess, the Army of Light waiting to take on the Army of Darkness, and it was just a really cool played-out trailer. Now, my history with Diablo, I've only ever dabbled in Diablo 2 on the PC years and years and years and years ago. So I'm actually pretty interested in checking this game out. It's also supposed to be coming to Game Pass, so I think I'm going to use that as an opportunity to try the game out instead of outright buying it and maybe not liking it. But a lot of excitement around this game. Halsey actually came out and performed a song that was related to the game. And I don't know, it was a pretty cool song, but it also just, all in all, I'm kind of excited about this game and really wanted to give it a shot when it comes out. So we will see when the game releases. We actually got a release date, and that is June 6th of 2023. Now, here's my thing, guys. One thing I try to look for is little Easter eggs or little fun things that developers or anybody in any entertainment medium does. And I'm sitting there and I'm thinking about, I'm like, man, 6623. Kind of a shame that it wasn't like 2066, because it'd be 6666. And then it dawned on me, wait a minute, 2 times 3 is 6. So I bet you they did choose that date purposefully, because 666, if you don't know, is the mark of the beast or the mark of the devil. So obviously Diablo means devil. Anyways, I have too much time to look into that kind of stuff. But either way, I was like, what? When I realized that that is probably why they chose that date. So Diablo 4, 6623. Can't wait to see more on this and hopefully give it a shot when it comes out. Next up, I have The Lords of the Fallen. And this is a reboot of, if you remember, quite a few years ago on the Xbox One PS4 generation, there was a game released called Lords of the Fallen, without the word "the" in the front of the title. Well, they have gone back, the developer, and decided to reboot the franchise as The Lords of the Fallen. And I never played Lords of the Fallen. I was always told how good of a game it was and thought it looked cool and wanted to check it out, but just never tried it. Never actually pulled the trigger and picked up the controller to play, even though it was released, I want to say, free on both consoles at one time or another, whether it was Xbox Live Gold, the free games for the month, or, you know, that was pre, obviously, Game Pass days, or PS Plus. Regardless, never played it, never checked it out, but this trailer that they showed off at the Game Awards, man, I mean, it looked awesome. I thought graphically, it doesn't surprise me here, but it reminded me from a visual design standpoint very much reminded me of Elden Ring. Now, if you look at Elden Ring, I personally felt like when they first were debuting trailers for it, the character and enemy design was extremely unique. It did have that vibe, that Souls-like, Borns-like vibe to it, to its character design and enemy design specifically, but it still had its own kind of unique flavor to it. And I feel like this, The Lords of the Fallen, also is, I don't want to say emulating, but paying homage to that style, whether it's intentional or not, because awesome, awesome looking level design, enemy design, and just graphically beautiful. Just the level of detail within those designs, it was just awesome looking. And it's coming to PS5 and PC and the series of consoles on Xbox. And I cannot wait. It's set 1,000 years actually after that original. And the world is 5 times larger than the one that was in that original game. So it's going to be a pretty massive game. And all we got was a 2023 release date. So we have no specifics on it as well, which is the case with a lot of the games, obviously. And I get it. You know, you don't want to commit to a specific date unless you're pretty sure nowadays that, yeah, we're going to be able to release it within that specified time. Next game on this list, though, is a very interesting one, and honestly one that I had never even heard of before the show, and that is Crime Boss Rock Case City. And it actually stars a lot of big-name actors, Michael Madsen, Michael Rooker, Chuck Norris, Danny Glover, Danny Trejo, Vanilla Ice, Kim Basinger. And actually, graphically, first off, the trailer, in-game, in-engine, I mean, it looks really good. And it is looking like it's a stealth action first-person shooter where you're supposed to be working to become this crime boss. And it's set in a fictional town of Rock K, which is kind of like this game's version of Miami. And it's set in the 90s. So from a nostalgia standpoint, that could potentially be cool. It could be almost like the Grand Theft Auto Vice City of this generation. If Grand Theft Auto 6 is ever coming out this or doesn't come out this generation, and if it's not set in Vice City. But regardless, it looks like it's supposed to be that Miami vibe as far as a city is concerned. And then you have that 90s backdrop to it as far as the clothing and the music and things like that. So from a design standpoint and a visual standpoint, it just looked awesome. And it seems very intriguing to me from a gameplay standpoint too, because it's almost like, oh, well, this could be very interesting playing almost like a Grand Theft Auto style of game or story setting, but from a first-person shooter standpoint. And also the focus on stealth adds to that uniqueness, in my opinion. So the biggest thing, too, to add to that is, I've said it before in the show, humor and comedy is something that's very rare to find in the games industry within a given game. So to have that as a what looks to be a good selling point for this game is very attractive to me. So I definitely want to keep my eyes on this one. It actually comes out a lot sooner than I would have thought, given that I'd never heard of the game before. It's looking like the release date is March 29th of next year. So just about 3 months, or a little over 3 months, until we could potentially find out how good this game may or may not be. Next up, this is the first of the two expansions that I referenced that I was going to be discussing, and man, it is the one that I'm most looking forward to. It is Horizon Forbidden West, Burning Shores. And the cool thing about that, first off, let me just say the expansion is exclusive to PS5 players. So unfortunately, PS4 players, if you were hoping to play the expansion, I'm sorry, you're going to have to upgrade to the PS5, and that is where it will currently be exclusive. Now, I will say that the cool thing, again, I look for little things here or there that may or may not be intended by the developer. Here, again, I think it was. You think about Horizon Zero Dawn. They had one expansion post-launch, and that was Frozen Wilds. Well, now here we go with Horizon Forbidden West. More than likely, this is the one and only expansion, and it's Burning Shores. So you have Frozen Wilds, Burning Shores, Ice and Fire. I don't know. I just, again, maybe I look for way too many of the little details there. But again, I pick up on those little things sometimes when, you know, whether they're intended or not. But it's very exciting for me because this is set in Los Angeles. They made it a point in the trailer to highlight the Hollywood sign that's out there in the mountains overlooking LA. So thinking about what the possibilities are, what the story may be, and just as much as I loved Horizon Forbidden West, I cannot wait to get back into that world and see what new adventures that Guerrilla has for me. And if you are interested on how much I love that game, definitely check out my review for it right here on this channel. Now, next up is a very big contrast to the kind of games that I've been talking to so far in this segment. And the next game is Tekken 8. Now, I do enjoy a good fighting game. Obviously, just a couple episodes ago, talked about Mortal Kombat 12 or Injustice 3. Which one is next? Which one would I prefer? Check out that episode if you haven't to see what my thoughts were on that. But Tekken is obviously a long-running series in the fighting genre, and it's also one that I have dabbled in quite often over the years. Now, my first foray into Tekken would have been Tekken 2 in the arcade, and I enjoyed the game. I thought the characters were pretty cool, and I'll admit the one character for me in Tekken 3 that really drew me to the franchise, believe it or not, was King. you know, this human body with a leopard head. I mean, it was just, it was very intriguing. So for whatever reason, when it was as far as within the arcade setting of playing the game, I always was drawn to him. And I enjoyed the Tekken series. I thought they were fun games. I never liked them anywhere near on the same level as, say, a Mortal Kombat or Killer Instinct or Primal Rage, but I still really enjoyed them. And I did follow them onto the PlayStation 1 and dabbled in a couple of the entries there. Tekken Tag Tournament on PS2. And really, to be honest, that's kind of where my Tekken experience and dabbling ended, was way back then. But I got to tell you, ever since they showed the debut trailer of Tekken 8 months ago at that Sony press conference, oh man, I have just been really honestly excited to actually play this one. And I'm very much looking forward to it. I think the graphics look phenomenal. It was kind of a brief trailer, I would say maybe a minute and a half to 2 minutes, that we got here at the Game Awards. And, you know, we were confirmed of a returning character. If you haven't seen who that is, check it out online. It's very interesting if you follow the storyline of since Tekken 2, I will say. But in general, the combat looks great. And I'll be honest, they did show a new trailer for Street Fighter 6 as well at the Game Awards. But Tekken 8, for me, since its debut and since Street Fighter 6's debut, Tekken 8, I'm much more interested in and excited for. So cannot wait to jump back in the ring as King, because he was confirmed in the trailer as a returning character when Tekken 8 releases later next year. Now, the next game was another big surprise for me, Remnant 2. Now, if you don't know what that is, Remnant from the Ashes is the first game that released in that series, now that we have a second one coming. It's a series, officially, I guess. And Remnant from the Ashes always looked interesting when it first released. Never got around to playing it, but guess what? Yet again, it was one of those games that released as a PS Plus freebie. And because of that, I decided to finally check it out. I didn't play a whole lot into it, played a couple hours into it, but I actually really enjoyed what I played. Now, I understand it's supposed to be or preferred to be played as a cooperative game, but from what I played, it was single player, and it was perfect. You know, some games, if they're co-op centric or co-op first in mind when being developed, it doesn't always transition well to try to play single player or by yourself. I did not think that was the case at all when it came to Remnant in my short few hours with it, but very excited to see a new sequel coming out for that, and surprised as well that there was one. So it is coming PS5, Xbox, and PC next year in 2023. Now, next we have the second expansion that I was going to talk about in this segment, Cyberpunk 2077, Phantom Liberty. Now, this comes out next year as well, no specific month or date given, but just 2023. I'm not going to worry about specifics when it comes to Cyberpunk and release dates, though, because obviously, but we did get a first unveiling, if you will, of Idris Elba, the actor. He's been in so many things, Beast most recently, but he was also in Fast and Furious and Hobbs and Shaw. And many, many other things over the years. Really great actor, and he looks to be playing a really cool role in this new expansion set in Cyberpunk 2077. I just got to tell you, the graphics, oh my God. I've got to get back to that game at some point, because I never finished it, loved it when I was putting it down, and if I was caught up in the game, I would be all about checking out this expansion whenever it releases next year. Now, this next game that I'm going to talk about, I was kind of surprised. I'll be honest, I kind of forgot about this game. Suicide Squad, Kill the Justice League. So for me, the trailer didn't do a whole lot for me because it wasn't actual gameplay. It was in engine, but it was a cutscene that we saw, and that was it. It was just the Suicide Squad, and they had finally, I guess, just beaten or defeated the Flash, walked into a building, and there was a cop, it looked like, that was running around and running scared. And you could tell it was obvious that the cop was running from Batman. Well, ultimately, once the Suicide Squad caught wind that it was Batman, Harley Quinn's like, oh, don't worry, Batman don't kill nobody. And then the body of the cop is flung from the rafters, and you could tell it crumples and he's dead. Then Batman shows up, and you can tell. And that's the whole premise of why it's called Kill the Justice League, is the Justice League has been infected and they're kind of running rampant and Yeah, that's why the Suicide Squad's sent in to try to tame them or subdue them or however it works out. But there's Batman, and he comes down, and I am the night, I am the dark, I am Batman, you know, that whole spiel. But the cool thing about it, it was from Kevin Conroy, and we got the confirmation that he is, in fact, returning this last time, unfortunately, to voice Batman as he recently passed. So we did get a specific release date for it as well, May 26th of 23. So not too far off on that as well, roughly a little over 5 months. But I want to see some gameplay. I haven't seen full-on gameplay in months. I mean, I can't even remember if it was closer to a year now, that last trailer that we saw that actually showed some good, fun gameplay. And, you know, at least we got a release date and we kind of have a time frame of when we hope to expect to play this game. But gamers, this next game was the one that I was probably most anticipating and the one that I knew going into the Game Awards because it was confirmed pre-show that it was going to be there. This game, oh, I cannot wait to play Star Wars Jedi Survivor. I absolutely loved Jedi Fallen Order. Loved the character of Cal Kestis and his droid BD-1 and just that whole game was amazing. It was the first time you really probably truly felt like you could wield the Force and a lightsaber, and the exploration, the Metroidvania style of gameplay, the worlds that you go to. I absolutely loved it, and I cannot wait to play this next game. We finally got our first look at gameplay for Survivor, and it is set 5 years after that original game. Cal and BD-1 are back, and the gameplay looked just as awesome as in the last game. There's obviously the great animations and exploration. I really couldn't quite make out enough of the details, though, of the planets that they showed to see if I could tell which planets they actually were. You know, it was obvious that you went to Kashyyyk and, you know, many different other planets that were known in the last game, also some brand new planets. So I'm very curious to see where this game takes Cal and BD-1 when it releases, because we did get that confirmation for the release date on March 17th of 2023. So again, a very short 3 months and we will be able to play this game. It's available for pre-order now. There's all kind of pre-order bonuses. Ah, I can't wait to play this game. Now this next trailer, gamers. This one was also a big shocker for me, surprised me, didn't see it coming, and that is Death Stranding 2. Now, Death Stranding has been around for quite a few years now. I always wanted to play that game, always wanted to play it. Just there was always something else that kept me from playing it. Another game release, or I was so far behind, I felt like, because I was playing a 200-hour game, whether it was Valhalla, or then it was Horizon Forbidden West, or whatever the case was, there always seemed to be something in my way of playing that game. Well, even with the director's cut, the PS5 upgraded version of the game, I was like, man, this is it. This is my extra push to finally play this game. And still, I did not play it. But watching that trailer, I had no idea of Death Stranding 2 at the Game Awards. I had no idea what was going on in the trailer, what anything meant. And I'm sure anybody who's played the first one or played it through to the end, you probably were just like, oh my God, this is happening in this person and this character. And I had no idea what was going on, but the cool thing about it is I still thought it looked awesome. Even having no idea what the characters were, what the context of anything was, I was actually still really intrigued and entertained, and man, I got to play this first game and figure out what all this means. So we didn't get a release date. We didn't get anything like that specific, but Hideo Kojima was there at the show and he talked about it and he's been working on it for a while. One of the interesting things they're talking about online is the question asked about, hey, did the pandemic affect your story and your writing for Death Stranding 2? And Hideo actually had said, I had finished, completely written the story for Death Stranding 2 once the pandemic had happened. But once the pandemic hit and I experienced that, I completely rewrote the story for Death Stranding 2. So that'll be very interesting to see how the pandemic directly affected that design decision and story decision, but only time will tell. Now, gamers, the next game, and it's almost the next to last game here. The next game was Judas, and that game I am so excited for because I love the BioShock series, and Ken Levine, who is the director and creator of that series, this is his next game and his studio. It's a narrative-driven, single-player, first-person shooter. And the description that was given by the developer is a disintegrating starship, a desperate escape plan. You are the mysterious and troubled Judas. Your only hope for survival is to make or break alliances with your worst enemies. Will you work together to fix what you broke, or will you leave it to burn? So the very brief trailer of different gameplay snippets, it would look like it was just like BioShock. And I mean that in all kinds of respect and excitement. You know, BioShock, you have plasmids, which are basically a version of magic for the player to wield within the game world. There is something exactly like that, it looks like, in this game, not to mention your regular gun combat. The visual style of the world looks to be very similar to what we could expect from a Ken Levine designed game, in the sense of, think of Rapture from the original BioShock or Columbia from BioShock Infinite. The level of detail and the uniqueness and just that style, that almost 1930s style look, Fallout does it as well. It has that vibe to it. So I am very much looking forward to this game. No release date, of course, yet for it. But man, I am definitely going to be keeping my eyes on anything related to Judas. Now, the last game I want to talk about here from the Game Awards that I was most excited about, we already knew we were going to get something from it, and that was Final Fantasy 16. Gamers, if you listen to the show for a while, you know how big of a Final Fantasy fan I am. I absolutely loved Final Fantasy 15. I've been waiting, obviously, for years to see the next entry in the series, and this one just looks awesome. Every trailer I've seen for it has just really knocked me off of my seat, except for the first one. The first one, I was a little disappointed, and then we got into a lot of the other details of the story and the characters and exploration and combat, and man, ever since then, every single trailer has just like, I just can't wait to play this game. We finally got our release date with this newest trailer, which was called Revenge. If you want to look that up on YouTube, it's definitely a very, very interesting trailer. And I think that the little boy who is the younger brother in this trailer, if you listen to his voice closely and you played a Plague Tale, either of those games, pretty positive the same voice actor who does Hugo in those games is the voice actor here. But either way, regardless, very cool trailer, very much enjoyed it. And June 22nd of 23 is when we can expect to play, finally, Final Fantasy 16. Now, as of right now, it is a PlayStation 5 console exclusive, but there is a disclaimer on the end of the trailer that shows that will not be available for other consoles until December 31st, 2023. So that leads me to believe, you know, a lot of times if you look online and you see release dates for games, and there is no specific release date, but they just put a placeholder for the year at December 31st, I don't know if it'll end up coming out next year. I definitely don't believe it'll come out on New Year's Eve on Xbox, is what I'm getting at, as far as on the consoles other than PlayStation. I see it releasing more so maybe around spring of 24. I could see it releasing on Xbox, maybe like a definitive edition or game of the year edition or something to that effect, or maybe even June. Maybe it will end up being a full year later. I don't know. Regardless, if you have a PS5, June 22nd is going to be absolutely massive. It's going to be one of those days or few days that I end up requesting off of work, guaranteed. But that was the main games and two expansions that really stood out to me at the Game Awards this year. A lot of great, awesome stuff to look forward to in the next year. And that was the best part about it. Outside of maybe one or two titles, everything, at least as of right now, is something to look forward to next year. So I cannot wait to see what that year brings, if it actually brings all of these experiences. I'm going to have to figure out how to find the time to experience them all. Not to mention, the weird thing is, and they're talking about it online too, so I got to bring it up here, is where was Xbox at the show? We had one sizzle reel for Game Pass, but we had nothing else new, nothing announced, nothing brand new, nothing update-wise to any of the other games that have already been released or announced. So I was like, man, where was Xbox at? And I see the speculation online has a lot to do with probably with what's going on legally in the FTC and their acquisition of Activision Blizzard, probably prompting them to kind of just stay low and stay quiet. Like, yeah, Phil Spencer is in attendance here. They made a point to bring that up at the beginning of the show. But other than that, there was no announcers from Xbox. There was no specific trailers for Xbox exclusives or anything. So it was just kind of weird. But Regardless, again, with that, that's also something we'll see take shape as the new year starts in 2023. But that was this week's Catch of the Week. Now let's open up my captain's log and see what games I've been playing. Gamers, since last week's episode, I didn't have necessarily as much time to play as I would have really liked, and there's a few things that I would have liked to have gotten back to and discussed with you more, my further progression in them, but it's all good. I do have one brand new game that released since we last talked, and that game will be the first game I talk about when opening up my captain's log this week, and it is the Callisto Protocol. Now, gamers, you know, at this point, if you've listened to me, I love survival horror games, and the Callisto Protocol is one that has been on my radar ever since it was first announced, and I could not wait to get my hands on it. I mean, Dead Space is one of my favorite horror franchises, my favorite gaming franchises, to be honest with you, and when I heard that Glenn Schofield, who was the co-creator and director of those first couple games in the Dead Space franchise, was actually heading up this project, I was super stoked. I could not wait to see what he was going to bring new or different or just, honestly, some of the same stuff that I loved about the original Dead Space in the second game to this title. So let me just say that I know that there's been a lot of negative stuff online about, a wide range of things, whether it's frame rate droppage or just the stuttering issues on the Xbox Series X, claims of Sony sabotaging intentionally the Xbox version of the game, all kinds of insanity. It's just a lot of insanity is the best word I know how to describe it. I don't know about the validity of the personal intentional sabotaging of the game. I don't necessarily believe that, but I do know a lot of people have had some issues with it. Glenn Schofield, speaking of him, had actually come out and said recently it was a clerical error. Basically, somebody pressed the wrong button on the patch upload. And here we are, because there was a day one patch, if you didn't know, that was supposed to basically smooth all these issues that are happening out, and it was the wrong button press. So we get the wrong patch, essentially. Well, to give you guys some perspective, I am playing on the PS5. I did opt to purchase it and play it on the PS5. Honestly, the deal breaker for me, as has been the case with a lot of multi-platform games this generation, was that amazing DualSense controller. Once I confirmed that there were actually adaptive triggers and haptic feedback functionalities that play into your experience throughout the Callisto Protocol, it was really kind of no question for me that this is the console I'm playing the game on. So I will say I only played about an hour and a half of the game, but I do feel it was enough time to be able to talk to you guys about my initial thoughts, and really specifically once I get to it, the combat was very interesting to me. So first off, in that hour and a half, the first thing that jumped out at me is one of the big things, one of the positive things that people are talking about online about the game, and that is the game's visuals. I mean, graphically, I got to tell you, I've played a lot of games, and this game is arguably the best looking game I've ever played. It is absolutely phenomenal looking from a visual standpoint. I cannot tell you how much it just blows my mind. As I was sitting there watching the opening cutscene, seeing the level of detail of the characters in the game, the ray tracing that's at play and at work here, the lighting effects, the fog and steam, and to be honest, the fire was the only thing that really kind of stood out to me. I was like, you know what? It's kind of odd. I've actually, with all the amazing graphics going on in this game, I feel like I've seen better looking fire in other games. But it wasn't a deal breaker. It was actually really didn't affect my experience at all, to be honest with you. It was just that good. I can't get over how amazing that game looks. And when we start talking about animations and lip syncing and the voice act, it is absolutely amazing what the developer was able to do with this game and with Unreal Engine. Now, I will say that the audio, I got to throw this out there as well. I mean, again, another thing that has been positively received when you see different feedback from players online is the audio as well. And it is no joke. The audio is amazing in this game. Now, in that hour and a half that I played, I played wearing my 3D Pulse headset, the made for the PlayStation console and 3D audio, that spatial audio. Oh, it's so amazing. But it's specifically made to tailor to the PS5 and its capabilities when it comes to audio. So, honestly, this might be the best sounding game I have ever played up to this point through the 3D Pulse headset on the PS5. And why, you may ask? Well, the clarity. I mean, the crispness. So there's these robots, if you will, that are kind of security robots. And the kind of tone that they carry with their voice and as they're speaking and everything, the way that it comes through the headset, it's kind of hard to describe. But man, I mean, it's crystal clear and it's just right there in your ear. Even when you have your different, I would say, NPCs that are talking to you through different comm links or what have you, their voices, the way the comm link sounds, it sounds like you're wearing a legitimate comm link in your ear and you're there. It's just insane. And then outside of that, when you're just kind of walking around the environments, I mean, that spatial audio, the fire crackling, different noises and sounds. And I mean, horror is all about sound. It's a huge factor in building that tension and creating jump scares and things like that, which Callisto Protocol is all about. So from a visual and audio standpoint, Callisto Protocol is, I mean, top notch, top level, top of the shelf, top of everything. If I could say top one more time, it is just really, really awesome and done expertly well. Now, when we start talking about the game's story, I'll talk about that real quick. It's very interesting. You know, I kind of already had an idea going into it based on the trailers and different things that I had seen and read on the game, that essentially you crash land on the moon of Jupiter. And there is a moon that is 100% all about it's a prison moon is what they call it, actually. And that's not good. Ultimately, you get taken in as a prisoner. I won't go into the details of how that happens, but you crash land on the moon, you get taken in as a prisoner, and then this outbreak happens, this kind of what seems to be a viral kind of outbreak, and mutations start happening of all the prisoners and the workers that work there, and just all kinds of chaos is breaking out. And now you're in the middle of it all, and you have to figure out how to survive and get out. So on that premise, it seems it's not going to break the mold when it comes to original storytelling in that sense, and I'm okay with that. But what I am looking forward to is the backstory, the lore that's built into the game world. And I started to see very small glimmers of that as I explored in different audio logs that you can find and listen to. And even some of the different references made in cutscenes over that hour and a half, it was like, I wonder what the details are behind the company that is running this prison planet, if you will. So when it comes to story, definitely some good stuff, some interesting, entertaining stuff going on, but I won't say that they break the mold again on story. When it comes to gameplay, now, I got to tell you, again, Dead Space, I love those three games. Loved, loved, loved the second one, the best of the three. I think most people who have played all three would agree. There is a certain style and feel that those games carried with them. It was very unique, in my opinion, at least at the time, to that series. And you can just identify, oh yeah, that's Dead Space. Well, it is absolutely no coincidence then that the Callisto Protocol, it feels almost in that hour and a half. Honestly, I'm not lying here. It really felt to me almost like Dead Space 4. And look, it doesn't surprise me because you have a lot of people besides even Glenn Schofield, the director, from the Dead Space team. So you have those people, those developers that were unable to continue on the franchise that they birthed and that they loved. And honestly, EA kind of destroyed with their involvement and pushing microtransactions and everything else with Dead Space 3. More action, less horror, co-op, microtransactions. It just absolutely destroyed, in my opinion, is why the Dead Space series disappeared for all these years. Regardless, I feel like this was a chance for the development team to kind of get back together. And you know what? Let's do what we would have maybe liked to have done with Dead Space 4, or kind of continue where we left off with Dead Space 3, or maybe even 2. is the better way to put it. So dead space is felt for me around every corner in this game. And it's not a bad thing per se, but it's also, it's kind of like, man, I really wanted this game to kind of make it its own, have its own feel. You know, like, okay, I could see it's the spiritual successor to Dead Space, sure, but it's its own game. Now, again, hour and a half is a short amount of time to play, but when you look at what the supposed playtime is, the range is anywhere from 9 to 15 hours online. So it's not a whole lot, technically, that I have left to go through. And when I think about the details of what I'm talking about and the similarities, so for instance, just the way that your health bar is, and I like this, but it, so Dead Space kind of started this, if you will. The rig is what it was called, the suit that Isaac Clarke wore in the Dead Space games. Your health, to eliminate the interference of a HUD on screen, the developers opted to show your health on the rig, the outfit worn by Isaac Clarke, and these different little slots on the back of his suit. And it's very similarly done in the Callisto Protocol. There is a, let's just say, an implant on the back of the neck of the main character, the protagonist, and that essentially is what shows you where your health is at. So you have that same similar kind of thing. You also have the curb stomp, which Dead Space, I won't say originated that in gaming per se. I would say that Gears of War probably beat them to it by a couple years, but in the way that Dead Space does it, it's the exact same in Callisto Protocol. You walk up to an enemy who's downed, and you just, you know, spam the stomp button, and you usually get some kind of a pickup, some kind of item, recovery item, currency in the game, whatever the case may be, sometimes nothing. But it's the exact same feel. The camera angle even angles it the same as it did in Dead Space. And I was just like, wow, they really went that on the nose with the curb stomp here. Now, I will say the one thing that is majorly different from Dead Space is the combat. So in Dead Space, it was all about dismemberment, right? You had the plasma cutter that you could change the angle of it, and the lasers would, you know, shoot off the limbs of the necromorphs. And that was the whole point of that game and that series, is you can't just shoot a necromorph in the head and call it a day. You got to weaken it essentially by shooting off its limbs, you know, whether it's the arms, legs, whatever, even the head also, throw that in there in the mix. Well, it's very different, at least so far in the Callisto Protocol. So far, I have only experienced combat in the melee sense. And from what I understand, I could be wrong here, but again, to avoid spoilers and any other things, I don't like to read too much into previews or a lot, whole lot of feedback once I start a game. I don't want to get it spoiled for me. So when it comes to combat, as far as I understand, melee is the predominant form of combat. And when it comes to that melee in this game, it is very, very intense and very in your face, as it should be with this kind of the context of this game. But with that being said, it is done very uniquely. I will give it that. It is very unique. And that it's kind of controlled and really based around your dodging with the analog stick. And that is what kind of has thrown me, I won't say thrown me for a loop. It's just going to take me a minute to kind of get adjusted to it. And once I get in sync with the controls, I think I'll be okay. But I was really struggling in just some basic enemy encounters in that beginning hour and a half of having to dodge left or right, depending on which direction the enemy was swinging from, whether they were having a haymaker punch throwing at me or just diving at me from a certain direction. You have to angle the analog stick in whatever direction it is to dodge out of the way of that attack. And then you have the R trigger, which you can use, or R2 on the PlayStation, to attack at that point. And it really, it's not just about spamming the attack button either. You, at least in my experience so far, it looked like you probably get a couple, two, maybe three solid hits in, and then you're going to have to back off and either block, which is done by holding down on the analog stick, or, like I said, dodge by moving the left analog stick left or right. So, regardless, the combat is done very interestingly, purely through the analog stick as far as dodging and blocking, and then just the one type of attack with the R2 button. Now, I'm not saying that this is something I dislike. It's just going to take me a bit to get used to again. So, regardless, Very unique combat, feels different, but as far as the ambiance and walking around and curb stomping and showing the health on the back of your character and things like that, there's just, it's very much a Dead Space vibe here. And the interesting thing for me is going to be when the Dead Space remake of the original game comes out at the end of January, at least as of the time of this recording, that is the expected release date of the game. It's going to be very interesting to me because I plan on getting that and losing myself in that as well. It's going to be very interesting to see how similar, especially being that close together, that these games actually are. Because I know Dead Space Remake is obviously going to kind of be doing its own thing as well as evolving what was there and still bringing back some of what was there before. But at the same time, it's kind of apples and oranges, I would say, comparing or trying to compare the gameplay of a game that was standard way back in 2008 and flash forward 14 years later to the Callisto Protocol and try to stack it up against it, you know, that 14-year-old game. So I can't wait to see how they compare, because by the time I finish God of War Ragnarok and get to Callisto Protocol and finish that game, it'll be that much closer, probably within weeks of the release of Dead Space Remake. So can't wait to talk to you guys about that. But so far, I did enjoy what I played of the Callisto Protocol, and I can't wait to make this my focal game and really lose myself to it and get into its details and understand better and find my groove within the combat. But overall, good stuff. Check it out if you're interested. If you're a fan of Dead Space or survival horror, you'll definitely really like it. I didn't have any issues as far as frame rate or anything like that, just to put that out there. I had a good experience with it from that perspective. So good stuff with the Callisto Protocol. But now let's turn the page in my captain's log to see what the next game was and my dominant game this past week. And that is God of War Ragnarok. Gamers, over the course of the past week, I was able to put 6 more hours into Ragnarok, which brings my total to 47 hours. Put a lot of time into this game already so far, and I am officially on chapter 10 out of 18. So halfway through the main story, and I feel pretty good about it where I'm at. I don't know if that means that it's going to end up taking me close to 100 hours to complete this game. But regardless, 47 hours, just about 50% complete with the main story. Feeling really good about it. So when I last left off telling you what I was doing in the world and where I was at, if you remember, I was in Midgard. And I had pretty much gotten to a point where I had done the main story in Midgard. And I had the option to continue exploring and find and do side quests and other collectible hunting. Or continue the main story. I opted for the collectible hunting and the side questing. So I did continue to do that. I had a lot left to do, a lot more than what I really thought that I had, to be honest with you. And I completed multiple favors, which are what the side quests are called in the game if you haven't played the game. And ultimately, I ended up leaving Midgard having been 82% complete with the realm. Now, there are still some inaccessible areas that are requiring or were requiring an ability that I didn't have yet still at the time. So I opted to go ahead at that point. All right, I've done everything I feel like I can do right now. Let's move on with the main story. Now, before I do that, I will just put out there the Kvasir poems that I've mentioned to you guys before. The fact that they are based around different PlayStation franchises, I just absolutely love it. Absolutely love it. And I found arguably my favorite one so far in this play session. And it's one of my favorite PlayStation franchises ever. And this poem happened to be the one for Days Gone. Woo! Absolutely love that game. Wish we would get a sequel, but we probably never will. Regardless, I was super stoked when I realized that was what this poem was. So that was really exciting. So after I did leave Midgard, I made my way back to Brock and Sindri's treehouse, advanced the main story, and this ultimately brought me back to the realm of Svartalfheim and the Mirkur tunnels. So back to Svartalfheim, sure, it's a realm that I've already been to in the game, put a decent amount of time into at the beginning of the game. But what I love about this game is it's one of those things where you can be in a realm for hours, leave it, and then come back and there's hours more of content and locations and areas that you have yet to go to. I love that. So you come back to Svartalfheim, start out in an area I didn't even know existed there previously. And basically it's these tunnels that I was talking about, and it was really awesome. It was a great time going through those tunnels and joining up with this other companion at the forge, which was an amazing time. And ultimately, this whole quest was for me to receive a new weapon. And finally, with the reception of this weapon, I gained the ability that I've needed for quite some time now. The one I referenced earlier that I didn't have in Midgard. Yeah, well, now I have that ability. And it comes in the form of the weapon, the Draupnir Spear. Now, the Draupnir Spear, if you don't know, that is a very interesting weapon. I don't want to say too much about the details around it because there's some spoilers there, so I'm not going to go into that, but I'll just say that I had already known before I got to the Draupnir Spear that there was a new weapon in Ragnarok. Obviously, this is it. And I didn't know the functionality of what the weapon was. I didn't even know it was a spear. I just kept hearing about the new weapon in Ragnarok. So now I know. And it's good stuff. I will tell you, I've enjoyed using it in combat and different other ways to use the spear. Obviously, there's different things that you can do in the environment to unlock even more accessible areas with certain abilities the spear brings with it. So regardless, I did make my way through the rest of the story in Svartalfheim, and now I'm actually going back through mopping up some of those previously inaccessible areas with the spear that I want to get done before I go back to Sindri and Brock's house to continue progressing that main story. I figure I'm already there at Svartalfheim. It's one of those things, I don't know if you guys feel the same way. There are times in a game where you leave a world or a hub world, or in this case a realm, and by the time you leave it that first time, you feel content. You feel even sometimes like, all right, man, it's good. It's time to move on. Time to go try something new, right? And then you come back to it, and you start out initially like, I've been here before. But then you start seeing new things, or in this case, you get a new weapon or ability that allows you to unlock new things, and it kind of reinvigorates that excitement to be in that realm again. And that's kind of where I'm at with Svartalfheim, and I figure, you know what, instead of coming back a third time, which I may end up having to do anyways, at least for now, let's try to knock out as much as I possibly can and see what I can do with this new ability and weapon. So that's where I'm at right now, is just kind of going back through that area and mopping up and seeing what else may be unknown to me at this time. So that was this week's Captain's Log. But out of all that, between those two games, what was my highlight of the week? Gamers, if like me, you've been playing through God of War Ragnarok these last few weeks, and you also are a fan of photo mode, then like me, you would have been absolutely impatiently waiting for the photo mode to release in God of War Ragnarok. Now, we knew at the outset of the release of the game that it was coming, in a few weeks. We had no specific release date, but bam! Santa Monica decided last week it was the right time to release in a patch and an update, and man, I am super stoked that they finally released this thing, because I'd already dropped 40 hours into the game by the time they released this patch, and I feel like, or I didn't want to feel like, I had missed out opportunities for more refined shots. And I'm sure, yeah, I have, obviously, but I feel like I did still get a lot of really cool shots that I liked in those moments as I progressed throughout the game. So at this point, again, I just mentioned in my Captain's Log, I feel like I'm about halfway through the story. So I feel like it's perfect timing. I got about half of the story left and whatever else I may be doing exploration-wise. And now we have photo mode. So I wanted to tell you, my highlight of the week, if you hadn't figured it out, was the photo mode in God of War, playing around in it and getting to see what nuances it has and what features it has. Because when it comes to photo mode in a game, if you listen to my reviews, I actually have photo mode as a review segment in those reviews. And that is if a game has a dedicated photo mode. If a game doesn't, then obviously it's not in the review. But I love photo modes. So there's a few things I look for, and each one that I prefer. And let me just tell you, God of War Ragnarok just about checks off all the boxes. Now, the biggest one at the beginning here is something that it doesn't check off, which is instant one-step access into photo mode. I always use Assassin's Creed Origins, Odyssey, and Valhalla as an example. You just click the two analog sticks together and you're there. That is not the case in God of War Ragnarok. You do press pause and then press square to go into photo mode. Not a big deal. Still prefer just the one-step process. But overall, the features is what really, really matter, right? And it didn't really disappoint here. The camera control and the lighting and the brightness and things like that, those are all pretty basic, but also good. There are some games I've played where they don't have the elevation camera control, which is really frustrating, or it's not done with the triggers, which I hate. I hate it when you have to kind of line up and use the analog stick to go up, go forward, go down, go up. So they do it really well in God of War Ragnarok, and I was very happy to see they have the logo, which is a big deal for me to have that logo as an option, and also borders. They have frames, they have themes, and then also emotes. Kratos, Atreus, whoever the characters are, you have the option of different emotes for different characters on screen. So I had a lot of fun doing some selfies and some other things with Kratos in the photo mode, and just in general trying to find certain angles and things that I couldn't do before without the photo mode. So that was my highlight of the week this past week, finally getting an opportunity to have the photo mode options that I've been lacking and wanting in God of War Ragnarok. Now let's open up a chest of buried treasure gaming tips for you that I have in God of War Ragnarok. Gamers, when it came time to think of a tip for you this week, a real quick one that I have, it has to do with that Dropnir spear, the brand new weapon that you get about halfway through the story of God of War Ragnarok. Now, the main thing here, the real quick thing that I wanted to let you know and point out to you that I have loved using in combat, do not hesitate to throw. You can actually throw up to 4 spears at once and impale an enemy with them. And they'll just kind of sit there, and you can choose at your leisure when you want to detonate them by pressing the triangle button. Now, there is a little icon that pops up on the screen around the reticule to show you how many spears that you've thrown and how many you actually have impaled onto an enemy or a surface. And I just thought that was awesome, because if you time it correctly too, when there's a group of enemies and you impale even just the one enemy with 4 of the spears, that chain reaction of explosions can affect a wide radius of enemies. And it can also affect environmental explosion opportunities like explosive barrels and different things like that. So just really keep that in mind when you're in combat, and especially when you're first trying out and getting used to the Dropnir spear here at this point in the story of the game where I was just talking about being at. And just really give it a shot, kind of hone that skill down and use that in combination with obviously the Leviathan and the Blades of Chaos. But just wanted to point that out to you. Don't hesitate. Throw all 4 of them into a single enemy and man, you could have a nice little explosive reaction. Now let's go check out this week's Captain's Decree. Gamers, this week in Captain's Decree, I want to ask the question, how do you toe the line between spiritual successor and outright mimic? Now, I came to this question as I was playing the Callisto Protocol, and as I stated earlier in the episode, man, there was just some exact replicas of animations, camera angles, and overall sense of dead space in this game. Again, I do want to play and plan on playing to the end of this game, and I'm hoping that as the game progresses, things will open up and it will become its own game. And I understand that coming out of the shadows of a game and a series like Dead Space for Glenn Schofield and the developers of the original Dead Space series, I get it. If that's where your bread and butter is sci-fi horror, then you still want to do something within that genre. And you probably feel a little bit slighted by EA, the way I had referenced what happened with Dead Space 3 and the separation of, you know, Schofield and company, and the way Dead Space 3 was received, both critically and commercially. But at the same time, I don't know, there's a part of me that feels like, huh, I wonder if, was there like a personal, like, oh man, we're going to show EA how, you know, they messed up, and this is going to be, hey, this is what Dead Space 3 should have been. And I'm sure there's a little bit of that in there, and I get it. You know, human beings, we have those emotions and those tendencies. I understand that. My thing is, though, is when it comes to actually executing the product, I don't know, should they have gone the way of sci-fi horror and been so similar and close to Dead Space? Because I didn't mention it earlier, but even the enemy types in the Callisto Protocol are almost pound for pound necromorphs. They may not have, at least the ones I've seen so far, you know, the claws and things like that coming out of their backs. But instead of claws and whatnot, they have these, you know, porous bulbs of pus coming out of all over their face and the sides and backs of their bodies. So, I mean, it's just, you trade apples for oranges, right? And I really wish that they're, maybe they should have gone a different route, is my point. Instead of being a spiritual successor, maybe just go in a completely different direction. Try a different type of horror. I don't know what that would have been, but it just, so far, it feels too similar for me. And, you know, it just got me thinking, like, how do you toe that line? How do you maintain being a spiritual successor to what at one time was your baby as its creator and developer and director? And you still want to be in that world and that universe and that type of universe. That's what you love. But how do you toe that line of being something new and fresh at the same time? And I really just so far haven't experienced that. And I know it's a hard dilemma to figure out, but what do you do? is really where my question is, man, I question whether they should have gone with sci-fi horror is ultimately where I'm coming from here. And I love sci-fi horror, but I just feel like so far it's a little bit too on the nose, and maybe we should have gone a different style of horror to really break apart from the Dead Space comparisons, because I feel like that's a disservice to the game of Callisto Protocol as well. If people are just constantly saying, oh, Dead Space clone, Dead Space clone, I think that that is an unfair bias towards the game. So we'll see as I get further into the game how that potentially, hopefully, goes in the other direction of showing me how you toe the line between spiritual successor and outright mimic. That'll do it for this week's episode. I hope you've enjoyed your time aboard the SS Gamer. You can join its crew by reaching out to me via email at lostatseagaming365@gmail.com, as well as search for Hulking Yoda on the Xbox, PlayStation, and Nintendo Switch networks. You can also find me on social media on Instagram at lostatseagaming, as well as on Twitter at lostatseagamin, the number one. Thank you for listening, and until the sea says otherwise, we'll keep sailing.